Shady here with another Pirate Pods interview. I'm in San Francisco with Brent and Joey from Every Movie Picture. Can you guys say hi?
Hi.
What's up?
What you do in the band?
I play bass,
Joey. Bass.
And I sing, and I play some guitar, write some songs, dance a jig.
All right, first thing I want to do is talk about your first release on V2 Records, Heart Equals Weapon. Where did you guys record?
We recorded at with a place called Stratosphere Sound in New York City, and it's a studio that's owned by Arthur,
the guy from
it's one of the guys from Fountains of Wayne, sorry, and James E. Hoff from Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. God, that was hard. I was drunk last night. Can I say that? I am like fucking retarded. As soon as we started recording, I can't speak. So Stratosphere Sound, owned by James E. Hott, which is cool. Eli Janney produced our record. He's from Girls Against Boys, and he works out at his studio. It's kind of a private studio. They don't do a ton of public, like commercial. They don't record demos and stuff there, but they do like albums there for bands. And then Eli, in any band he's working with works there, and James E. Hodd, his bands do stuff there and whatever. So it was cool. We got to go to New York. We had an apartment there for almost a month, and we made a record.
Is that how long the recording took? About a month? Or?
Well, we tracked the record in like, I don't know, 10 days maybe? And then the rest of the time was used for overdubs and mostly just guitar overdubs and editing and stuff like that. We didn't need that much time, I don't think, to be in Stratosphere. We ended up going and finishing the record. We were actually only in Stratosphere for like maybe a little under 2 weeks, and then we did the rest of it at Eli Janney's studio, which is in a little hole in the wall in New York, like in the Garment District somewhere.
Yeah. And your choice of like touring and playing live or recording, what would you rather be doing?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I would say, I would usually say playing live, but we've been playing live so much. It's like, I think like in the moment, like a nice break would be recording, but recording's kind of intense too. Shit, I don't know. I'd say right now, recording, right now. But I love playing live, so I don't know. Joe?
I love playing live too. Touring's a little tough. But
what do you think? What do you want us to say? Yeah. It's an inside
joke. I want
joke.
You to say whatever you want to say.
What do you want to hear? Just kidding.
So a few songs on this record. Of course, first single out, Signs of Life. What's the inspiration for this song? Where does this come from?
What do you think the inspiration
is? Yeah. Signs of Life was written at a time. It was a call to arms in a way. This song was, I was just getting really fed up with everything I saw going on in the country, like politically. Come on down. Come on down. From these heights of splendor. To give you the right. Understand. And George Bush had just won re-election, and I was just in agony. Like, I couldn't believe it. But then I also felt like people were going to feel defeated by it and give up, essentially, and that, you know, he would run roughshod over the country, which he pretty much has, so the song sort of had no impact whatsoever. But except to help me, it was like cathartic. I got to kind of get it off my chest. And the song is basically just telling people to, yeah, you know, stand up, like snap out of it and shake it off, pay attention, and then, you know, really, you know, rally. Like, I think it's a patriotic song, honestly. Like, I basically said, like, one of the lines in it talks about how we have the right to do it. Like, you know, other people died to give us the right to fucking show some signs of life, like to stand up and do something. So that's what the song is about. 12 a.m.
We call it. I'm pretty fond of Outlaw, actually. I was hoping you guys would talk a little bit about that song.
Outlaw, that's another one that I like to play live. Like, like Signs of Life is fun to play live, and it's got kind of a political edge to it. Outlaw, similarly, has sort of a political angle in the sense that, like, the song is kind of taking on this idea of sort of faux patriotism, in my opinion, as it's sort of expressed through these sort of I don't even know how to explain it. Sort of Toby Keith. I kind of single him out specifically in the song. Represent your country, man. Ignore the blood on your hands. The model American. Toby Keith won't shit for a while. It's hard. Toby Keith. Why? Because he writes these songs where it's like, I'm gonna put a boot in your ass, and it's courtesy of the red, white, and blue, and it's just like real chest-thumping bravado bullshit. And he's, it's totally misplaced anger. Like, these people, if they're real patriots, they would obviously see that, you know, our civil liberties being trampled on, running around putting our boot up people's asses indiscriminately is getting us nowhere but in a deep hole and, like, building enemies all over the place where we didn't have them before. It's asinine. So, like, a real patriot would stand up and put a stop to that. But instead, Toby Keith he capitalizes on ignorance and public sentiment to sell records. And then, you know, and then there's a lifestyle that they wrap around it, which is, like, driving your big truck and, like, kicking ass and all this stuff that they're going to do. And it's like, I'm lockstep with the president. He tells them what to do. You know, they're consumers. People tell them what to buy. They tell them what to eat. They tell them what beer to drink. And they just walk along. They've got the law on their side. They've got the government on their side. They got everything on their side. That's not an outlaw. And that's just, you know, that's just like Joe Blow. And they're letting someone else do the thinking. So the song is kind of a dig at that. You know, it's like calling Toby Keith an outlaw in sort of a mock way. And right. And again, not just him. He's sort of, you know, he's the emblem of the lifestyle, but he's just a guy who's making money.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the
sick part. Got anything to add to that, Joey?
Sorry.
I can't wait till Toby Keith kicks Brent's ass.
He's been saying that for a long time. I mean, these guys, my band is just, they're begging. They want Toby Keith to show up.
I got my money on Brent. Sorry.
Damn straight.
Toby Keith is like 6'5". He's okay. Huge.
You're a firm believer in the Irish rage, I think. You've seen it happen.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
He's big, but I'm crazy. And nobody drinks like me, so.
Well, he's probably not smart.
I don't know how much it helps in a fight. I don't know if I'm reasoning my way out of his, like, 8-inch.
So I want to talk about your writing process here. How does it happen for you guys? What do you do?
That's a great question. Because
how do you think we should do it? Yeah, really. We're in the middle of that right now.
That's so true. It's funny because we're in the middle of writing our basically the songs that will probably be our next record. And that's kind of why we're home right now here in San Francisco. And you know, taking some time off from touring so we could do it. And it takes, for us, we can't really be on tour doing it. Some bands can do it on tour. I don't know how the hell they do that, but we're not disciplined enough to do that. Like, when we're in some other town, we find distractions and stuff and run around and go crazy. And
we like to bowl.
We do like to bowl. It's weird. We're like a little bowling team. But anyway, not very good, but, you know, we take on all comers. Anyway. The process is like this. Lately, it's been, you know, we'll kind of go our separate ways and kind of come up with some ideas and then bring them into the room and hash them out. And that means that, you know, Joey will come in with a bass line, and maybe Alan will have something that he's written on guitar, and maybe he'll even program something. Hopefully that'll work out. That's how I wrote Outlaw on an acoustic guitar. So that's how it goes. Then we bring it in, and then we kind of chew on it. Things get thrown out. Things get kind of, you know, turned into a song, and other things get integrated into other ideas, and it flows that way. And then I write all the lyrics, and sometimes I'll write them, you know, sometimes I'll have them written already, and sometimes I'll just write them after.
Yeah. Right.
It's probably just like everybody else does it. I don't know. You've probably heard this answer a few times, so I'd be curious.
Everybody's a little bit different, actually, so
really?
Far. Yeah, definitely. So as far as, you know, you're talking about, like, the kind of music you play, you said it's odd for you, you know. Right now, it seems like every new band that comes out, you kind of get lumped into two categories. It's like either it's new metal or it's new wave or whatever. And, you know, where do you guys place yourself? Where do you guys think you belong? Do you belong anywhere?
Where do we think we belong?
Yeah, where do you think you
where
belong?
Where do I want to belong?
What do you think
about this situation
today? You're a rock band.
We're a rock band. We try to... It's funny because people have to put you into one of those categories, and so we've kind of just let people do that to an extent.
I mean, a fleeting bit of time. You know, it's a fine idea that they wanted to have something to put around, to wrap around it. I don't feel like we're that new wave. I mean, it's weird.
Right.
But, I mean, look at all the bands they lump into that. I mean, they almost lump Kasabian as an example of a band that they try to lump into that. And is Kasabian a new wave band by any definition? That doesn't make any sense. But they play them on the same kinds of radio, and they play them at the same kinds of club nights and you know, Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, you know, we were listening to earlier. That's an example of a band that they try to slot into that sort of same scene, for lack of a better term. I kind of almost like it better that way. Like,
right.
I'd rather be lumped in with bands that they'd play, you know, at the same club night than, like, putting any sort of sharper point on it.
So as far as main influences on the band, then, where do you guys pull your influences from? Is it other bands, you know, movies, books? Where do you guys get your influences?
Musically?
Yeah.
Probably everything we've ever listened to.
Everything.
I mean, we're definitely a music band.
Yeah.
I know what you mean by bands who are influenced by literature, but we're you know, we there are things we've listened to our whole lives, all of us, and there are things that we love that we just can't scrape off that probably come out in our music. And I mean, people say, like, oh, I hear early U2 in your music. Well, that would make sense. Like, we all own War. We all own October. Like, you know, collectively, like, that's one band that we all listen to at some point, or have liked at some point. You know, I mean, some people say, oh, I hear some Bowie. Well, that's cool. I mean, most of us like some Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
That was good. It was really good. I just listened to it this morning. I also listened to The Sounds. I mean, they're a new band. They're not just coming out with, I mean, their record's been out for a while, but I like it. I didn't actually, it really grew on me. I was made to like it. Because the first time I listened to it, I was like, I don't love this. And then all of a sudden, I
sounds?
Like, yeah, really? It's bizarre. Yeah, now I really like it. It's odd. It wormed its way in. I wish Dan, our drummer, was here for this question, just because he hates everything. So I like to hear him try to answer that question. Because, like, basically any band that exists outside of Every Move a Picture is perceived as competition.
The music industry, radio.
Ooh.
Internet right now, what that's doing to music, is it a
good thing? Did you see the last issue of Wired magazine?
Yeah. Radio's weird. Yeah, there is a real profound statement. That'll be the poll quote. Radio's weird.
Radio
is weird. It's like, I've heard, without singling anybody out, I've heard the craziest stories lately about radio stations that just refuse to play certain bands for purely, and I mean purely, petty political reasons. Like, radio sucks. Like, they're going to do arbitrary things like that and feed people bad music for all the wrong reasons, then I'm not going to really worry about radio. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. We live in San Francisco. Commercial radio here is probably the best in the country. I mean, Aaron Axelson is actually a fan of music and will play any damn thing he wants. This is the only place where that's happening. In the rest of the country, they're closing modern rock radio stations and putting on Spanish language, which is, you know, hey, that's fine for them, but...
No bueno,
you know,
for us.
No bueno here. but, you know, album, this isn't going to be one of them. You know, it's in our contract that it was going to be a 10-song record. So, hey, okay, you know. But something had to go. And one of the ones that didn't make it was a song that turned out... I never really loved the song, but the performance I thought was cool. And the way it came out, I went, wow, that was pretty special. Like, I think that was good. So I just said, fuck it. And I put it on MySpace, and I sent out a bulletin and said, our record label cut this off our album, but I'm giving it back. Like, they can just stick it, you know. And I just sent out a bulletin to, you know, to our fans, and we got a pretty good chunk of fans on there. And I just said, hey, here's the song. What do you think? You know, our label cut it, but I don't think they should have. And I just happened to accidentally make it a free download, so go grab it. And there were like, you know, within a couple hours, there were like, you know, I don't know, 2,300 people that had grabbed that MP3 within like four or five hours.
And they had a lot of funny things to say.
And they had a lot of funny things
labels.
To say about record labels. And it was pretty.
So there's something to be said for the internet right there. What's been the best part about touring?
In the States, I'd say Boise's a standout.
You know, that's no joke.
No, Boise's a great city.
Boise is insane.
We love it there.
We played two shows in Boise. They're great every time. Yeah. There's a radio station there that, and as much as they can't spin our stuff because it doesn't fit within their commercial structure, like they start playing Signs of Life and they'll lose advertisers and the radio station will get shut down in about 6 months. At least that's the way they explained it. Their DJs are coming out and supporting us. Records a scene. They're all into music, and it's not about like haircuts, but it's about like liking bands, and it's rare and it's cool. Really like New York. Dublin, Ireland was insane. We'd never played in Dublin. We had one show there. It went in, and those people, they do their homework, because they came out and they were like singing the song. We had no radio there whatsoever, so this is all internet again, back to the internet. And they're like singing and chanting and, you know,
smashing bottles.
Smashing shit and like jumping up and down. And like, I mean, I know that a lot of that's just them letting off some steam at the end of a long week. But, that's you know.
What is the one CD that you have in your collection that you're most embarrassed of, but that you love and you don't want anybody to know that you own it?
Can I say that I've got a couple things on my iPod, just a couple songs that are a little weird that I
have. That'll suffice.
Toxic, Britney Spears. I like that song. I thought it was good. I thought it was a good song. It's on my iPod. Presently, I haven't deleted it. You know, it's like one of those things I look at it and I'm like, I'm going to delete this. But then maybe I'll move on to the next thing. And I skip on down to like Bright Eyes or whatever's right below it. Britney, right, yeah. So, and then Sexy Back. I have Justin Timberlake's Sexy Back on my iPod. I know. I'm bringing Sexy Back. What? Like, eh? Like, yeah.
Somebody's...
That's that song. Who? I can't.
Can't do
that's what it does. He goes, I'm bringing Sexy Back. There's like some part. It's like candy for my brain.
Oh,
it's like crack. I can't help it. Oh, now you're all fucking cool. He was talking about Barry Manilow and everything, and like all of a sudden I say Justin Timberlake and I'm a pariah. Fine.
Pariah.
I want to know what the first record you ever bought was.
I think I know what mine was. I bought.
I don't have any idea.
Really?
You don't know? You can't remember. Seriously, like you got your allowance in your pocket, your mom drove you to the record store or something like that. Or you rode your bike, you know.
I had a bike.
Yeah. I had
a cool bike.
Mine was given to me.
What was it?
Commodores. It was a Commodores record. I can't remember the name of it. There's one that had Brick House on it. And it was given to me by like an older neighbor down the street, and I was like, this is the fucking shit. Like I just loved that. And then the next record I got that I bought on my own was Rick James. Ghetto Life. Like, I went back and started getting into, like, Rick James. Because this guy down the street was into it. And I thought it was, I mean, and it's funny because, like, you know, the guy down the street was not, like, you know, this wasn't Ghetto Life. Like, I didn't grow up in, you know, East Oakland. But, like, this guy was really into it. And he influenced me. And I loved it. I thought it was the Rick James.
Yeah, I think my first was a gift, too. It was from my grandma. And it was a Rod Stewart record.
Your grandma's sexy.
She bought me a Rod Stewart record. You know, it's one of the things where I'm sure she went to the store and was like, what's crazy? The kid.
Give me the most sexually ambiguous artist that's still safe
Rod Stewart record,
that you can find. Right?
I can't remember which record it was.
Really?
But it was a Rod Stewart record. I like Rod Stewart.
I do too. Yeah. I think Rod Stewart. I should be telling you. Anyway.
Say it. No, I want to hear it.
Rod Stewart has got an amazing voice.
Yeah. He does have an amazing voice.
And he doesn't do the music he should be doing.
Can I say that there's a song by The Walkmen called The Rat? I don't know if you know this song, but I think, and I wonder, if you ever talk to The Walkmen, maybe you can throw this one out with them. Does anyone ever tell you that The Rat sounds a little bit like Rod Stewart? Brent from Every Moving Picture wants to know.
Wait, what do you mean, like
we will ask.
His vocal delivery is Rod Stewart-ish, but he's completely unhinged. Like, he's just, like, letting loose, and it's got all this kind of anger behind it.
So that's what you wish Rod Stewart would do.
It's totally what you wish Rod Stewart would do. I don't really wish that Rod Stewart would do anything. I mean, he's great. Like, he's great for what he does. But it's, like, the Rod Stewart voice with, like, a little bit of, like, what's in my brain. It's cool. It's really cool. I like it.
Yeah. Okay, what was the first concert you ever went to?
Holy shit. I think the first concert... I saw Madonna when I was a kid.
Gee, you're the second person to say that last year.
Really? Yeah, yeah. No.
Ryan from Elephant, I believe.
My brother took me to see Madonna.
As well.
First concert I ever saw was Duran Duran.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good one.
That's impressive. I saw U2, too. I mean, like, not... It wasn't too long after that that I saw U2 on tour. And that was pretty impressive, too. I mean, it wasn't... I didn't see U2 in there, like, in what I consider to be, like, their very, like... prime time, like, you know,
dude, they're always October prime time.
And like exactly, and that's what I noticed about it. Like it was like a religious experience to go see U2,
yeah.
Regardless, you know, like Pop Mart or something, and they're still like it was you know, rapture to watch them, and they played all the stuff that you'd want them to play off of, like War in October and Unforgettable Fire and Joshua Tree and stuff. It was amazing.
If I were to open up your car stereo or your home stereo, what CD would I find playing right now?
Well, I mentioned that that I got that live Rage Against the Machine record. I've been listening to that a lot.
Yeah. That's literally what's in there right now?
Well, like, it's an iPod, so I'm not really
okay.
Sure what you mean by
that. Okay, cool. iPod's screwing up the whole thing now. This question is, like, obsolete.
Yeah, I was listening to Sounds as I was driving over here. We talked about Sounds earlier, and I was listening to that. But I was kind of shuffling it around today a little bit as I was coming over.
Yeah.
On my iPod.
On your iPod.
I was listening to U2 on the way. But I was listening to, you know, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. That song,
what?
City of Blinding Lights. That's the most amazing song.
That's a good song.
That's Pap.
Dude, that's a great song. You don't like that song?
Edit that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Hey, I'm going to call them like I see them. I love those guys, but come on. I don't like them.
Really? That song?
Really?
Dude, listen to it. Like, it's a
I knew you want. You want to take me on, too?
No, it's a song. I like this one. Though. Like, it's just it's a really well-written song.
I don't know. I don't. That's something of my favorites. I don't really like that album that much. It's fine.
Dude, Miracle Drug? Great tune.
I feel like that's sponsored by Pfizer. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. Miracle by Pfizer. They're in the pocket of the pharmaceutical industry. That bums me out. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
So that actually touches on something I want to know about too with you guys. How does it pay off to be a political band? Do you think? I mean, you know, you look at someone like Noel Gallagher who touched on it years ago, and I think he feels that it bit him in the ass. And then you get people like Chris Martin and Bono who have totally embraced this and they're like full steam ahead. Like, do you think people understand? Do you think they're listening to what you're saying?
Oh, I think they are.
I have an answer.
I'm sure you do. I think, well, just real quick, what I like about being in a band that's, you know, politically educated is that no matter how depressing things can get in this business, like, that is a motivating thing. Like, you know, we do it because we believe in it, you know? So, in dealing with all the politics of the music business, we know why we do what we do. And there's never a question about that. So that makes it easy. But we still want to kill people.
Jesus. What kind of politics are those?
Right.
Jihad Joe.
Sorry.
I don't think we're a political band per se. I mean, I think that
no, we're just aware.
Here's the deal. In at least in my view.
How are we not?
Well, here's the way I think of it. Like, we're writing songs and you know, you write what you know, right? Was that like what James Joyce or somebody? Write what you know. So we're writing what I know is I'm curious about things that go on,
right.
and that's what I'm writing about. Like,
well, we spend most of our time in the van talking about shit like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and if I were battling like a drug addiction, or I went through a crazy, you know, tumultuous breakup or something, maybe I'd write about those things. But battling? No, not really. Not so much battling. But you know, I'm just rolling with it. But for now, next record, maybe I'll be battling. Who knows? But it is nice to be able to get those things off my chest, off our chests.
Yeah. And when you're at a show and you're playing, you're not really that concerned with whether people are listening, you just want them to enjoy
to the lyrics
show.
And stuff.
You
right.
know, I mean, if they hear it later and they get it, you know, they get it.
Some
great.
People pick up on it, some
right.
don't.
Right.
The ones that do tend to have like a good reaction to it. The ones that don't, it kind of rolls off. Some people, you know, they respond, they leave us messages or send us emails or whatever. They're like, you know, they disagree or whatever. Whatever. I just tell them to go, you know, whatever. Listen to their Toby Keith record. Shut the fuck up. I don't do that. I never do that, actually.
Never encourage that.
No, I engage people. If they have something to say, that's good. At least they're saying something.
Right.
If you guys could be anything other than musicians, what would you be? What would you do for a living?
Vibrator. I thought this was like kind of so fast. God. I thought that was like in the Zen sort of like we're all energy kind of sense.
Oh, no.
Stonemason? I don't.
Cotton panties?
Yeah, we're going.
Vibrator.
Never mind my Tourette's. That's my disability. You know. Jesus. Sorry about that.
Anything to say to anybody as we finish up here?
Sorry.
Hello to your family. Hello to your friends. Okay. All right then. This has been another Pirate Podcast.
I've got your Lee press on nail. If you need it. Oh, snap.
So here we have it.
It's a little inside joke.
All right.
This has been another Pirate Pods interview. We're with Every Movie Picture in San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At 12 a.m. At 12 a.m. It's time to